never stoop to a stone cold Stone X. Yes, PWR fans, we have our 24-25 season top four.
Oh, we do. Bristol Bears did just enough for the home of Harlequins to book a date with Gloucester Hartbury in the playoff semi-finals, while Exeter Chiefs came up short against Saracens to miss out.
But it wasn't all about the top four, with Ealing Trailfinders giving a mauling by the Tigers and Sale Sharks managing another record points tally in their last game at home.
Yes, round 17 reviewed, round 18 previewed, Lucy Nye's one question, Sean Lynn and an historic club departure. That's Philippa Tuttiett. I'm Nick Heath and this is the Power Pod. Philippa Tuttiett, it's our third last show. Goodness. Oh, goodness.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
How did we get here? Wow.
How did we get here? How have we been allowed to get here?
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How was your weekend? How was Friday night? I was so jazzed. Saw you on the screen.
Oh, yeah. Him. I really enjoyed the role of reporter. I get to do it on a lot of World Feed coverage on men's and women's rugby, and I used to do it a lot in the days of the Premier 15 streaming, where you would host the coverage and, you know, hello and welcome to Shaftesbury Park. Now let's hear how the coaches were feeling ahead of kickoff with me earlier, and then you do those, and then you'd be like, right, now up to commentary. With me in commentary. And then you'd kind of wrap on the full-time score and be like, okay, we'll get some post-match traction in a minute and then run down and be the pitchline reporter. So I've sort of done, I've done all the roles, but actually to do it on big telly, I had makeup and everything. I had my night because it was the Pride game. So I had the Pride colours on my face. I really loved it. It was just nice to have the relationships that I have with the players to hopefully bring that across to the viewers at home and have some kind of nice, warm, fun conversations around the game, which I really enjoyed doing.
Yeah, I did notice a bit of a pod love between you and Ellie Kildare.
That was amazing, wasn't it? Yeah. Love Ellie for that. Yeah, that was completely unrehearsed. But yeah, she was just, I was listening to your pod. I was like, oh, I better say I've been listening to yours too. That was great. Did you enjoy your weekend off?
I did very much. Friday night, awesome game, brilliant. We had some friends round, lots of kids, which inevitably when you make plans with friends and kids, one of the kids is going to get sick, and that is what happened. So it was a bit of a divide and conquer weekend, right? You go here with them, I'll stay here with them, and you know.
Dirty little germ buckets.
Oh, I know. Just plans, just kids and plans. Just don't go together. Just, one of those weekends. But it started really well with that game. Caught up with a few of the other games as well. Wicked round of rugby. Absolutely wicked round of rugby. They are treating us. You know, even the teams, like we say, that weren't even competing for that top four. Trailfinders, once again. Oh, what a game.
I know. Well, we will get to that. That's, I think, our second game to review. But take us back to Valentine's for anybody that that couldn't catch up with the action at the Stoop.
Okay, so Harlequins 10, Bristol Bears 19. It looked like a bracing night last Friday for this one. So full credit to the near 7,000 people that showed up, making it a record crowd at the Stoop for Harlequins women. In terms of the game itself, Phoebe Murray opened the Bears' account, but World Player of the Year, Ellie Kildare, hit back for the host, capitalising on Claudia Pena's perfectly weighted kick, scoring her first of two tries on the night. Alicia Joyce Butchers and Sarah Byrne did enough for Bristol to win it, although Kira Bevan kicking the ball into the stands in the 80th minute did raise an eyebrow too.
Yeah, I mean, Bristol got 4 points secured and we were in that last sort of minute. It wasn't all 5 points. They had three tries. What did you make of that Kira Bevan moment, PT?
I think I made of it what she made of it when she realised what she'd done. You know, hands on her head, like, oh no, that wasn't the right call. You know, and you looked at the Bristol team, they were shaped to attack. It was pretty much a centre field turnover, wasn't it? And then you had this beautiful almost arrow of players just ready and waiting. And on the right-hand side where she actually kicked the ball towards, you could see they'd created a short. They actually had an overlap. So look, it wasn't a guaranteed. It wasn't like she butchered a 2v1. There was, you know, it was no guarantee, but when they were already 9 points clear as well, so you're like, if they were maybe only 5 points clear, you could think, okay, well, Kira Bevan's just being super cautious and doesn't want to risk the ball being 2-0, but they were 9 points clear. So even if the worst happened, you know?
Yeah.
I think it was just maybe a bit of, you know, rush of blood to the head. But hey, equally though, I'm getting for it because it was a wicked clearance kick from the centre of the field.
Well,
she'll
and
get
actually,
no credit for that.
her performance was superb. And actually chatted to Dave Ward after the game. I said, you know, how was that? He goes, oh, it was absolutely livid. He goes, but I cannot really lose my temper. He goes, you know, we got 4 points and Kira was brilliant for the rest of the game. So I sort of appreciated his consideration of okay, maybe a brain fart moment. But I heard afterwards, basically the whole of the rest of the team knew and were like, attack, attack, attack. No one's talking to Kira. No one's told her. So, I mean, how many times in world rugby do we see these sorts of moments where one or two people seem to not be on the same page? I don't know. Maybe they went out to the toilet during the midweek briefing about what happens in certain situations. Who knows? But yes, I think it was, superb performance from Kira Bevan, regardless of that bit. It was also the Sarah Byrne show. Last week, Phil, you asked for a pirouette from Sarah Byrne. She decided to give you a Friday Night Lights masterclass in Southwest London. More carries than anybody else. 23, with 11 of those being dominant, 55 post-contact meters, including a try. So, credit to Bristol on the road. They got what they needed.
Yeah, just such a great game though, wasn't it? So glad that this was shown on TNT. I had a lot of people coming up to me actually over the weekends saying they sort of stumbled upon it, and what a great game, you know, to stumble across. Feel for Harlequins, you know, they threw it at them, didn't they? But defence kind of let them down a bit. They missed a lot of tackles in that game. Great to see Jade Conkle-Roberts back in, but still no Alex Callender. Which that's not all down to her, but you know, she is a quality player, and hopefully she'll be back in next weekend, because I do think they miss her.
Yeah. Just a word, by the way, on anybody that I noticed quite a few comments on the switch of TV game after that all became known last week. And I totally get it. Saracens fans, Chiefs fans, you know, frustrated that game wasn't on big TNT sports. The game that was the option on the Friday suddenly became a can Bristol do it? I think there was more jeopardy on that. I know that Chiefs were the ones then in fifth trying to get in, but ultimately they had two games in hand. So it was Bristol's last match. There is the Ilona Marr factor, whether you like it out there or not. It's going to bring, you know, she's going to bring more eyeballs. The campaign has had more eyeballs as a result. If you are looking at growth of the league and more people seeing the product, then for me, moving it to that Friday night game is a no-brainer. I think you have to kind of just take yourself out of it's following her, it's following Quinn, it's following Bristol again. But I just think you do, you know, and 7,000 people at the Stoop for that standalone game. I know personally about 20 people who went, and they went because they heard whisper that it could be Ilona Marr's last game. Those are people who don't go and watch PWR very much. They're friends and friends of friends. So that kind of tells me all you need to know. And also then a few people said, well, but if it was going to be a BBC game, then why did TNT Sports switch to take it? As you know, couldn't we could have had two games that weekend. I'm afraid it doesn't quite work like that. So basically there is a big telly production done, and then it is taken by TNT Sports or the BBC or both. But there is one production that is done for big telly over the weekend. So that's why you couldn't then just go, oh, we'll have two. Obviously, we're title sponsors with more money in the league. We are hoping that will increase and we will have more coverage. But that is just, I just wanted to say a little bit on that, because it's a very industry thing to know a lot of that detail. So for any fans out there that didn't quite get that, then I just wanted to share that. Good. Understood? Happy?
Yeah. Excellent. No, I think it's good actually to give that context to it, isn't it? And look, ultimately, this is all coming from a good place. People just want to see more of the Premiership Women's Rugby, which is great. But I think giving just that little bit of background information maybe just helps people with their views and their voices. But equally, keep demanding it, because the more we demand that we want to see it, hopefully, like you say, the more games we will get seen.
Yes, totally. And I think it's something they're looking to try and improve next year, to try and have more live coverage or more game streams. So, you know, we wait and see what happens over this long summer we have coming up. Anyway, the next game. Well, you mentioned it earlier, Philippa. Saturday the 15th, Trailfinders 43, Leicester Tigers 45. Just the 14 tries at Trailfinders. Last home game this season, 7 apiece in this absolute score fest. Proper back and forth affair. Tigers went into the break 26-17 up.
thanks to tries from Talia Brody, Fran McGee and Meg Jones, and a penalty try. Kate Zachary, Liz Musgrove and Jess Cooksey all scored for Trailfinders. The ding-dong battle continuing immediately after the break. Brody scoring her second for Tigers. Vicky Laughlin responding for the hosts. Fran McGee crossed over twice to complete a much-deserved hat-trick. It was 45-22 to Tigers at 72 minutes before Trailfinders then chucked everything at it, scoring three tries in 5 minutes. But alas, Tigers clung on. What a game.
Mm. Oh my gosh, what a game. Initially, you know, I thought Trailfinders would have it. Even if they didn't have much of the ball, defence was good, put in some big shots, like proper hitting players back. And I thought, okay, here we go.
I thought that too, watching. But yeah. I thought knowing the result when I was watching it, I was like, this feels like a game that Trailfinders, yes, you know, at this point, will be going, great, this is good. We're riding all right. We're okay.
Tigers overplaying, you know, instead of kicking it out of their 22, they were insistent on trying to carry it. And at points they got turned over. I think that led to a try actually for Trailfinders. So yeah, it very much felt like, yep, this is Trailfinders game. And yeah, to see the result at the end, like, credit for Tigers. You know, they weathered the storm, they stayed in it, and they played some good rugby, really just reactional rugby, isn't it? You know, you've got Meg Jones in there. She literally does create something out of nothing. That little chip through she did, you know, there's a solid line of Trailfinders defenders in front of her, but she found like literally the 3 inches between someone's, you know, foot space to dink that ball through and get a try. So awesome game once again. Like, the fans, what a treat. And gutted in a way that Trailfinders couldn't get the win from it, but equally, what an entertaining game.
Yeah, a couple of the stats to pick out. Nikki Simpson, Meg Jones, Fran McGee, they all made the PWR team of the week, as did Lisa Thompson and Grace Moore, who was actually just, they score these. There's a kind of decimal score, and the highest one will come to the winner this week of team of the week was 8.6. Grace Moore was 8.5, just 0.1 off getting that. 9 carries, 28 metres, 15 tackles. You mentioned Meg Jones there. We know that she gets a lot of airtime because of how good she is and what a character as well. I was watching bits of that performance from her and I just thought Antoine Dupont, and I just thought, I really hope that fitness might allow Meg Jones the possible moment to be in the running for a World Player of the Year nod at some point, because she has got it. Like, there is something that she will see or do in a different way to other players. So yeah, it's a very early shout. We've only just awarded the last one. but yes, that's just a little nod from me.
No, I think that's an absolute great show. She really has. And she's just so enjoyable to watch, isn't she? And, you know, she fronts up in defense. She's not scared of a ruck. She gets in there. She does what she needs to do. Had some actually really good clear outs last weekend as well. Mm. And yet creates something out of nothing. Really entertaining player.
Yeah, good, good. All right. Okay. Then up to North London then.
Yeah. So on Saturday, it was Saracens 21, Exeter Chiefs 12. This is tough. So Chiefs knew what they needed to do for this one, but with their injury crisis, they just couldn't do enough. They made a decent start through Nancy McGilray, but Saracens responded in emphatic fashion through tries from Sophie Bridger, May Campbell and Poppy Keel to head into the break in control. Chiefs fought back through the ever-present Claudia McDonald, but Saracens held out. Credit to the three-time winners, Saris, who have made the playoffs every year since the dawn of the Premier 15s.
That says a lot about their consistency, doesn't it?
Yeah, I know. And especially in this season where they've had a bit of a roller coaster. They've had that odd loss. Mm. They know, don't they? As I say, they know. They coach well. They're good players. They find a way. Yeah. I really felt in this game, I don't know how you felt, but it was almost like there was very little in it. And then Saracens just had this flurry of tries. And then there was very little in it. It was, you know what I mean? It was strange to see the scoreline as it was in the second half, because you felt like there was just nothing between these two teams. And I don't know. I don't ever feel like Saracens were in control of it. I literally feel like there was nothing between them. But somehow Saracens managed to build that scoreboard and held on.
Well, yeah, and sort of almost two relatively low-scoring games, actually, weren't there, with Quinns 10, Bristol 19, and then Sarries 21, Chiefs 12. They were sort of slightly tight, edgy games at points. But look, let's spare a thought for Chiefs fans, for the players, for Susie Appleby, Steve Salvin and crew. Top of the table for such a large part of this season, but four losses in a row after 3 years in the playoffs, two of those as finalists, they finished fifth, which I think has to be the most painful placing in the league, right?
Yes, in a nutshell. Horrendous. They've had their injuries, you know, we do have to acknowledge that, but then equally lots of teams have had their injuries. That's part of the congested part of this season. These players haven't had as much time maybe to recover, and you haven't been able to rotate your squad maybe as much as you would have liked. But it is a shame, but again, testament to the quality of the league and the teams that are playing and doing so well right the way through. You can't drop those games. I do feel for them though, because like I say, I think there was very little in this game. But Sarries found a way.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, well, let's look at the last game of last round then. Sale Sharks 24, Gloucester Hartbury 41 was the evening game on Saturday. Gloucester Hartbury dominating the first half with three tries before half-time. Zoe Allcroft, Rachel London, Mia Venner on the score sheet. Domination continuing in the second half. Venner bagging two more tries to complete her hat-trick, with Gillian Bogue adding to the assault. The fight from the Sharks came through Sophia Stefan and Morwenna Talling, but it wasn't enough to stop the Cherry Whites from sealing top spot and top seed going into those playoffs. Mia Venner was the player at 8.6. Congratulations to her as being the player of the round. Also, we mentioned it in our intro, Sale Sharks, well, we only just talked about them getting 20 points at home and that being their highest home tally. And then they've gone and got 24 and bettered it with the champions in town. So that for me is a bit of a round of applause moment.
Absolutely.
You want improvement. You want people to still take it up a notch, and no doubt as a coach. And that's what Sale Sharks managed to do.
Yeah. And kept playing. You know, they kept playing. The odds were against them. They conceded early tries, and yet they're scoring in the second half. So, yeah, credit to them for staying in that fight and scoring against Gloucester Hartbury. That, you know, any other team putting 24 points against Gloucester Hartbury, that's good. That is strong. There could be an argument for maybe Gloucester Hartbury taking a little bit of a foot off the gas, but equally they came back at them. It was almost like every time Sale scored, rather than it sort of giving them the momentum, it almost gave Gloucester Hartbury the momentum, and then they went into fifth gear, you know, and then they came back with another try. But yeah, Mia Venner, I thought was outstanding. Hat trick, beat 11 defenders on her own. That's pretty impressive. Seven tries now in six appearances. What an asset for Gloucester Hartbury to casually have in the centre there, or indeed the wing. You know, great utility player, isn't she?
Yeah. No, she's certainly hit her form at the right time for them. Okay, well, let's move in to the last round of the PWR this season. My goodness, hasn't it flown by? We talked a lot about this congested season. It's been intense, but we've loved every minute of it. So they are all Friday night matches this week. Leicester Tigers against Chiefs, Saracens against Sale Sharks, Gloucester against Quinns, the TV game, Lightning against Trailfinders. Not so much at stake in terms of the table, but I guess we are still yet to confirm the venue of the first semi-final next week. If Saracens win, then they secure the home semi, but if they don't and Quinns do, then Quinns will host that semi-final. So let's run you through the games and what's coming up.
Okay, so as you mentioned, they are all going to be on Friday at 7:45. So we're going to start with Leicester Tigers, who are currently sitting in eighth against Exeter Chiefs, who are, as we say, in that painful fifth. So two teams that will certainly have hoped that their seasons went better. For Tigers, they held on against a Trailfinders side that loves scoring tries, and that shows that their season has gradually improved, and they're going to look to end on a high. For Exeter Chiefs, can we say they can still end on high? I think they've got a retaliation. Like, it's tricky, isn't it?
I wonder whether they're... I mean, I hate to say this. It's awful when you've had a disappointing end to your season. But for Leicester Tigers and the result they just got at Trailfinders, with perhaps a slightly downhearted Exeter Chiefs coming there, I think that the challenge for the Chiefs this week is to get yourselves up, get yourselves ready, end that season on a high for yourselves, in order to have a good break and be ready for next season, because you don't want to turn up there you know, and find it's another loss on the cards, do you? So, so yeah, I think they need to find that motivation within themselves. But they have had a lot of players out with injury. That kind of injury room list has been mounting. And interesting. Look, they've got a lot of North Americans in their lineup as well. Just wondering how things might look as we look over to the USA rugby landscape with the women's elite rugby. We might run through the rosters a little bit later with a bit of PWR interest. But how will their USA internationals take off over there? Will they be coming back? Oh, there's lots of questions ahead of next season for Exeter Chiefs. Honourable mention: Poppy Leach visited the most rucks this season, 428, second most tackles with 211. So that's a pretty epic performance from Poppy Leach over the course of the season.
Isn't it just work rate personified for that lady?
Yeah. So the second match that we're just looking at briefly, Saracens against Sale Sharks. Sarries back at home at the Stonex for the second week running. They know they're in that semi-final spot. They just need the W and their home semi-final spot is secured. Now, had Sale Sharks not gone down to Exeter Chiefs and beaten them, then I think by now we would just be calling this an absolute foregone conclusion of a result. I think the positions in the table will suggest that it's going to be a home win for Saracens, but Sale Sharks might just love the idea of going and causing absolute havoc on the last day of the regular season to go and try and get a result in North London.
Well, they've certainly showed, haven't they, that they fear no one. They don't mind where they play. They don't mind who they're playing. They're going to try and play. Saracens did put over 50 points on them last season, but that was almost like a different Sale Sharks team now, you know? So now, will Sarries have got to do some sort of squad rotation? They have to going in then to the semi-finals.
But well, I wondered that. Will they or will they not? Well,
yeah, because it is about creating that momentum, mm-hmm. and you want to make sure.
And they want the win, don't they? They
of course,
to
they
secure
want
that
win.
Home semi. So,
and they want a good win. You know, you want your last play to be, you know, a dominant Saracens performance, because that's what gives you confidence going into the next round. So, yeah, we'll have to look out for the team sheets there and see. But then equally, you know, Saracens have got brilliant strength and depth. So even if they do put some squad rotation in, it'll still be, you know, a very good team. But yeah, for Sale Sharks, go get them again. You're finishing your season out in such a great way. Let's see what happens with that one.
Yeah, totally. So that is Saracens against Sale Sharks.
Okay. Then we go on to Gloucester Hartbury, top of the table, against Harlequins. This is like a little Christmas Eve treat, isn't it? You know, seeing this game so early on, because obviously they're going to be seeing each other again, I would have thought. So it was the reverse fixture back in October that Quins lost 18-27 as the internationals were still trickling back to their clubs.
Yeah.
Quins will be keeping an eye on the scoreline at the Stonex, but they will expect Sarries to do the job there, you'd think. Gloucester sharing news this week that Carmen Castellucci has sustained a serious knee injury and could be one of those first names on the board no one wants to be on, ruled out of the Rugby World Cup. Oh, I even hate reading that.
I know, isn't it awful? Our thoughts with Carmen. That was news out of the club this week that probably ruled out. So we don't want to start that list.
No, we don't. Obviously, the semi-finals will see a four becoming two, so it's feasible that this could be a forerunner to a PWR final. So how is Gloucester's head coach Sean Lynn looking at it? Let's hear from him.
Look, Harlequins take a lot of pride in their defense and they take a lot of pride in their ruck speed. So there's challenges both sides to the ball for us going in on Friday. So intensity and accuracy is the key message.
Intensity and accuracy indeed. Sean Lynn's life is probably a little intense at the moment, generally, I would say. Over the next 4.5 weeks, he has a three-peat to contend for and his first ever Women's Six Nations campaign to get cracking into with Wales. Madness. But anyway, are we interested, actually, in how he's approaching it? I think the answer is yes. Here's a little bit more from the man himself.
All my time on with Gloucester Hartbury is normal, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday. The players probably haven't seen any difference with that. My presence is always there. It's just the Wednesday piece where I'm usually watching the pathway players. That's where I'm going into Wales camp and, you know, the Wednesday is where I'm really fully focused in the Wales environment. And I'm going about the family piece with Wales, and I've already had meetings with a future family, so which is the pathway, what we talk about. And so that's the big piece for me, and how I connect with the lost family. So those are the things that I'm looking at. Certain individuals have been playing really well from the future family coming into the family. I've been super impressed with Alau Purse, Maisie Davis. I think Bryony King has been a real big standout for Gwalior. And the resilience that the Brython players, Lucy Isaac, and, you know, and Natalia John has just been outstanding within that. So, look, I'm super proud of that Celtic challenge. And but then also you've got to think about how special the family are at the moment. 23 representatives in the PWR semi-finalists. So really excited to be working with these group of individuals, players and staff.
Well, Sean Lim, what an embarrassment of riches he has at club and of country. But interesting to hear him very happily name-checking a few young names there, talking about the family, the future family. We can tell what he's doing here, can't we? It's are you excited? I think I'm excited already.
Yeah, certainly am. And there, you know, he's right. There are some really exciting youngsters. I know Elna Snowsill, you know, the former fly half of Wales, she's involved with the under 18s and is constantly praising how good they are, the talent there. And obviously we've got the under 20s as well. So that progressive pathway, and then the Celtic Challenge, which he's referring to, watching these teams play in, they get that competition to be able to play against Scottish teams, Irish teams. And yeah, Bryony King, I've heard of her, seen her play touch rugby, actually. Very mobile, very mobile forward. But I love the fact she's come through sort of a touch rugby circuit. And then Alau Purse is Gwen Cleann Purse's sister.
There we go. And as you know, I assumed Gwen as much.
Yeah, Gwen Cleann Purse is a force to be reckoned with. And again, her sister is very much following in her footsteps. So yeah, really exciting. I can't wait to see this first squad that he'll be picking. But yeah, gosh, when I think I'm busy, I just need to think, you're not Sean Lynn.
Yeah.
Get a grip of reality. Like,
absolutely.
Okay.
Well, and look, I love the fact that he's talking about creating those bonds like a family. That is clearly what Wales have needed for a while. So yes. Wishing him all the luck there. But back at Club Matters, you know, he's ensuring that he wants to get the job done there, and to deliver this elusive three-peat, which would be an extraordinary thing. So it's going to be the live game on TNT on Friday night down at King's Home. Also, news that King's Home are reprising officially Queen's Home. So they're going to be bringing Queen's Home out for the semi-finals. I think every attempt to get another whacking great attendance there as well. So if you fancy that one, then make sure you get along, because of course it's Gloucester Hartbury against Bristol Bears. Bristol riding again. So that'll be good. Incidentally, Friday night live on TNT, Claire Thomas is commentating. Do you know who is her co-commentator?
Oh, no, I don't. Go on.
It is Bristol Bears, Dave Ward.
Wait, what?
There we go. Your face. Tell me everything. Yep. Dave Ward is stepping into the broadcast seat alongside Claire Thomas to do commentary on Gloucester Hartbury against Harlequins, which is a different perspective, right?
Yeah. Amazing. okay, cool. Well, yeah, that's different.
Yeah, I think Claire's sort of outlet was, we have an interesting relationship when I'm in the role of reporter. So to be, you know, to be teammates on the night, as it were, will be a different way of doing things. But he's not a man shy in giving an opinion, and you know, I think that is that's going to be very interesting viewing.
Yeah,
what? You are speechless.
I've just never heard of a current coach commentating on another team in their league. But hey, look, we always say, don't we, in women's rugby, we haven't got to follow the norm. Let's break out, let's do things different. I think that could be something really cool moving forward. Throw the odd coach into the mix. Not too much, because I also enjoy commentating. I don't want to be out of
job. Don't be taking my jobs away.
Yes. Yeah.
Great. Susie Appleby, I know, has sort of expressed an interest in it before, or at least I've said you should be doing this, and she's up for it, because I think she would be super as well. So there we are. Okay. That's how that one is going. Feel free to tune in on TNT Sports for that. And then the last game of the weekend, well, they're all at the same time, but the last one on our sheet, basically. Loughborough Lightning 6, Ealing Trailfinders 7. Ooh, what a little ding-dong this is going to be. Since Stadium at Franklin's Gardens, Loughborough will be playing this home match. Of course, after news this week of the departure of their captain, fantastic Scotty herself, Rachel Malcolm, more than 15 years associated with the club. What a player.
Wow. I actually didn't realise it had been that long. And yeah, and for the news to come out so quickly, I was... that was quite interesting, but then equally, her choice, and hopefully will be a really good game for her to finish out on. It's going to be a competitive one. Both teams, you know, as we've said, peaking at the right time, coming into form. This could be a try fest.
This could be an awesome game. I actually, talking of the tries, you know, the sort of 14 that were scored at Valis Way last weekend, I was just having a look. Trailfinders are actually fourth on the log for the number of tries scored this season, which tells you how much they're, you know, how well they've been playing. Mm. But the slight problem is they're the third worst for conceding. So I know that that we've mentioned their defence a couple of times over the course of the season, but clearly if they can right that ratio, they've still conceded more than they've scored, then that obviously would be a better way for things to be next season. And look, Rachel Malcolm, where's she off to as we're recording? We don't know. We don't know when that news is going to come out. I was chatting to Claire Thomas, asking her if she's got any ins and any insight. She was saying that, you know, well, could be this, could be that. Which clubs might need a bit of back row? Could we see her moving to somewhere like Trailfinders? Are they getting the checkbook out and seeing who might be around? Mm-hmm. So that's Claire Thomas's little tip for the top, that she's saying that she could go to Trailfinders. Thinks it could be open that she goes to another place in London, in West London as well. We don't know. But we thank Claire Thomas for being the one to put her neck on the block there and give us a suggestion. So the table after round 17, we know our top four. Gloucester Hartbury in pole position, 63 points. Saracen second, 57. Quinns third, 55. So that's that 2-point gap that will come down to who's going to have the semi-final at home. Bristol Bears, 53. Exeter Chiefs, 46 points. Then all square, Loughborough Lightning and Trailfinders, 34 points each in the table. So that's why there's a direct shootout this weekend for that position in the table. Then it's Tigers on 17 and Sale Sharks on 4. Okay, shall we just jump into the power line quickly, Philippa? Because we have had a couple of messages. We've had one actually from Rob, who we regularly hear from. And he is raising the question of cynical penalties and when they might not be. He admits it's a bit of a technical question, but he's asking why any infringement after a line break is considered cynical and yellow carded. So he's saying, look, if it's a genuinely blatant penalty, like obvious offside, clear side entry, diving off feet, lying on the wrong side, blah, 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 fine. But not every penalty is cynical. Now, it's coming through his Exeter Chiefs lens, which will allow, obviously. But he said in the last two rounds, Chiefs had a player make the tackle after a line break, then go for the jackal, got pinged for being off feet. In both cases, they were clearly on the ball, just lost their balance, probably because the tackle player was holding on, which meant an elbow went to ground, resulting in an off feet penalty.
I love that little dig. They were probably holding on to the ball anyway.
Probably should have been a penalty either way. Anyway, it says, this is not a deliberate act and surely should not be called as cynical just because there was a line break beforehand. Penalty should suffice. In Claude's case, Saracen scored anyway under the advantage, so how should it have been a yellow card offence? Then a few weeks back, Charlotte Frey got carded for not rolling after a line break when it was clear she made the tackle, immediately tried to get out of the way, half pinned in, but the ref said she wasn't rolling because she couldn't get out fast enough, classed it as cynical as it was after a line break. So it feels like this blanket approach is ignoring some important nuance in those situations. I mean, this we'd love Sarah Cox back to answer this one, but it is an interesting discussion point, I think. I guess if a team has made that line break, the referee is going to be viewing that they are in full attack mode that ultimately you're going to have to be doing an awful lot to try and stop them. Mm-hmm. And at that pace of attacking, you know, manner, the defense has got to, anything the defense does to stop them at that point, I guess, has got to be squeaky, squeaky clean.
Yeah.
And therefore, if you are panicked and you are going in and you're not squeaky clean, if your elbows do go on the floor or if the ref thinks you're not rolling away, they're going to say, well, look, you've really killed the momentum here and you've not been as technically sound as possible. So I think that that for me must be the reason that they say, you know, it's you're killing the momentum without being absolutely perfect.
Yeah, yeah. It does raise a really good point around that. I think it's almost like, you know, when a player goes for an intercept, but let's say they're coming off their try line to do it in defense mode, you know, 9 times out of 10, that will be a card, whether it was a genuine attempt or not. Whereas if they were maybe in the opposition's half and they went for it, there'd be a little bit more consideration. So it's that kind of thing, isn't it? That if a team in attack is looking like they are full attack mode, try scoring mode, you do something that infringes, it's pretty much pinged straight away. But one that maybe we can get Coxie's thoughts on retrospectively and add in next week or something.
Yeah, we'll see what we can do. And the other one was from Tom Sims. No review this week other than to say, what a game and atmosphere on Friday night. How good was round 17 with the top four finally confirmed? And despite the good news of the BBC involvement, shame no other matches were on TV. Fingers crossed for next season. Question for you both. What's gone wrong at Exeter after their flying start to the season? A final note. Great to say hello to Nick on Friday and keep up the great work, both of you. It was lovely to meet you, Tom. Thank you for saying hello. And he wanted a selfie. He said, you have to take it because I'm terrible at these things, which so I duly obliged. So what has been going wrong at Exeter, Tom is asking. Well, I think an area to bring some focus to is their injury list, because they called Kanako Kobayashi in for the last game because of the length of the injury list. According to the club, this is what we've got. Last weekend, this was the previous weekend, saw Alex Tessier suffer a facial fracture. To add to a list that already features Maisie Allen, ankle, Gabby Cantona, ankle, Flo Long, back, Adele McMahon, hamstring, Cleona Maloney, calf, Michaela Nelson, knee, and Taylor Perry, hamstring. How many of those names have we mentioned over the course of this season after positive Chiefs performances?
Yeah.
And so they've been having to do that over the last couple of rounds with you know, that ever decreasing number. Emily Robinson was back making a first start after recovering from an ankle injury herself. So yeah, I think when you've got that many of your sports cars in the garage needing repair, it's gonna impact, right?
Yeah, and it's literally like you've got the spine of the team. You know, you've got your front row to your fullback, big players missing. So, yeah, you've got to give that bit of context to it. Sport is just cruel sometimes, isn't it? You know, real shame. It's going to be a tough one to review that, because you look at the first half of their season, they were doing everything right. You know, and even if in their game last round against Saracens, they passed more, they carried more, they had more possession, they had more territory. They were doing all the right things, but just didn't have that killer cutthroat try scoring side, unfortunately.
Yeah.
One maybe more for the strength and conditioners to be reviewing and looking at how to keep that injury list down.
Yes. Okay. The power line then, 07880716219. Thank you to those who've been in touch. And look, we hope we're going to get a little bit more from you before our last couple of rounds of the season. Certainly looking forward to those semi-finals. Right. One question time. And I have to give full credit here to Caroline Moore, who works out at Exeter Chiefs, listens to the pod, and basically heard Tess Fury's one question. And before I'd even got in touch to say, could we have Lucy, she went and worked and got Lucy Nye's response for
amazing.
Us. So that's impressive. So here is Lucy Nye and her one question.
Hi, PowerPod. This is Lucy Nye of Exeter Chiefs. Thanks, Tess Fury, for your question. My answer to my favourite ever dinner has to be a roast dinner with all the trimmings. Definitely. And my question, big question, is to my fellow RAF teammate, Sarah Bonner. If you could go to dinner with anyone, dead or alive, who would it be?
Thank you very much to Lucy and Caroline for helping make that happen. This question always makes me laugh. If you could go to dinner with anybody dead or alive, well, I'd rather they were alive then. Thanks. we know what she meant. So there's one for Sarah Bonner there, fellow RAF pal. So we shall try and get a catch up with one of our favourite Scots at Harlequins. But thank you, Lucy. Right. Any other business time? There has been a lot of movement in the US rugby landscape, with the teams announcing their rosters for Women's Elite Rugby, WER. Just a little touch on some of the names that PWR fans may be more familiar with for you here. So within the New York Exiles roster, Tess Fury. Within the Bay Breakers, Catherine Treader, Olive Kelter, Bulu Mataitonga. I mean, if that's the level of talent they've got in that lineup, then the Bay Breakers are certainly looking good. Isla Alejandro, former Saracen, who is in the Chicago Tempest roster. Katie Benson, Emily Henrik are in the Boston Banshees roster. The TC Geminis have got Olivia Leatherman and I'm guessing sister Lucy Leatherman. Apologies, I'm not up to date with the family. And then the Denver Onyx roster, Talia Brody, Rachel Erica, Maya Learned, Halle Taufu'u and Carly Waters. Now, those are some big names in terms of USA rugby as well. Just exciting to be seeing some of the talent we know from the PWR. There's other talent as well. I know I've had the pleasure of working on the Rugby 10th Championship. The likes of Jade McGrath's in there, Kristen Bitter. These are all superb, you know, women's players internationally. So huge, exciting times as Women's Elite Rugby comes into focus.
Yeah, absolutely. And if anyone knows where we can watch this, is it being streamed? Please let us know and we can put it out on our socials so everyone can keep a track of this new league, show it some support.
Exactly. Right, Pete T, you wanted to draw attention to a little competition you spotted.
Yeah, this looks so cool. So head down to the PWR website and you have a chance to win not only hospitality tickets for the PWR final, but you can also attend the pre-match coin toss. You also get a match ball signed by the finalists. You get a special guided tour of the tunnel, the changing rooms, and a limited edition match day program. So get onto the website. It's under the news section. You can enter there. I just think it's great that we've got this. You know, we were talking, weren't we, before we recorded the pod, where we've been to finals. I remember going to one back in 2019, and I think it was about 2,000 odd crowd. And to be fair, not many people knew about it. So where we are now, being on a mainstream broadcaster with hospitality, with giveaways, you know, it's how many thousands of people we're going to have in the crowd. It's just absolutely brilliant. And obviously, as well, our live show before.
Well, indeed, yes. If you haven't got your tickets, lovely segue, PT. we have the ultimate final live show. You can join us at the Power Pod, along with our friends at The Good, The Scars and The Rugby, powered by Vodafone, for a live show at the Stonex Stadium at that PWR final. So yes, whatever tickets there are left, if we have any, then get onto the link. It'll be in the podcast description so that you can join us, which will be an awful lot of fun. Not long to go now. Right, I think we are at the point of PT's power play. Take it away.
Woohoo! Okay, so this one comes from the Tri-Fest game of Trailfinders and Leicester Tigers. And it's this, normally, you know, it's a try that wins the game, or it's the game-changing moment. And sadly for Trailfinders, this try didn't win them the game. But I've given them the power play for the fact that they came back into it with this flurry of tries, incredible. Three tries in, like, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes. And this one was the last one that nearly won them the game. So it was a turnover center field. I think they got the penalty. And then Katie Matteson, quick tap, off she goes. She made a real impact in that game when she came on.
Oh,
she
and goes, how quick is Julia Shell, by the way?
Oh, that, yes.
She was lightning quick. Anyway, I meant to mention that earlier. Yeah. Sorry, carry on.
No, that's fine. So Katie Matteson, quick tap, off she goes, gives it to Captain Fantastic, Kate Zachary, big Bosch carry, offload, back to Katie, and interlinks them back on the inside to get the try for Rosie Inman. And I've loved this because this is at the dying part of the game. This was a heavy game. You know, they were attacking, they were defending. It was high ball in play. And yet for this try, you could see the whole team were following. The whole team were flooding through on that inside line support. So it wasn't the try that won them the game, but it was an ultimate team try. Good on you, Trailfinders. Another entertaining game. And yeah, just work rate and connection. Really lovely team try to finish off that game.
Well, it might not have won them the game, but it has won them PT's power play. And that's that's worth just as much. That's worth 6 points, I'd say. Maybe next season, if you get the PT power play, you get 2 league points. Great.
Oh, yeah, there we go. Let's mix it up.
Sure, that would go down well. Marvellous. Well, round 18 beckons, and we hope that you're going to get out and catch a match before, of course, we move into those semi-final playoffs. Will it be Saracens at home to Quins? I think that's where the smart money goes, but who knows? Will round 18 throw up another little surprise or two? What have you got this weekend, Philippa?
This weekend, of course, so Six Nations is back in. Obviously, Friday night, I will have multiple screens open trying to keep a drift of all of the Premiership Women's Rugby games. Yep. And then on Saturday, I'm going to be with Five Live at Wales against Ireland with new coach, new players. Hey, we're going to win, aren't we?
Of course. Of course. Why not? Hey, I wonder if there's going to be any of that kind of what they talk about in football, that kind of bounce back feeling when a new coach is in charge.
They haven't got a bounce that high for us to call it a bounce back. Let's be honest.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
And what about you? What are you up to?
I've got a good day today. The day we're filming, I'm nipping off after this to go and join a bit of filming for which we're doing. Been looking to get a documentary away for the last little while on the incredible four women that founded the very first World Cup, Women's World Cup, 1991. So Deborah Griffin, Alice Cooper, Sue Dorrington, Mary Forsyth, the four of them are legends. And so there's a bit of a shoot going on, which is the four of them round the table at Richmond Rugby Club, where they first started, where it all kind of came together, because this is the first time they will have debriefed what they achieved since 1991. Because back then they held the tournament in Wales, and back then when it was all over, they basically had to get in their cars and drive back because they were having to go to work the next day. Because that was the world in 1991. It's an amazing story of everything they achieved, involving, you know, HMRC asking the Russians when they came over why they were selling vodka and caviar on the streets, involving customs and excise, and you know, the hotel the England team were staying in, having to say sorry, we've double booked for a conference. Would you mind all sleeping on the floor in this room? There are absurd tales throughout, and these four women are true inspirations. So I'm going to get to spend the day with them as we film their memories, which is the kind of centerpiece of the documentary. But if any sugar daddies or sugar mummies are out there and have got a few quid, this doc is still after funding. So I'm just unashamedly throwing it out there to our PowerPod audience. If you're sat on a few quid, if you're the CEO of a company and you want to be part of telling this original story in a huge Rugby World Cup year, then please. Get on the fair. You got the power line number. we'd love to hear from you. So that's what I'm doing during the week. And then I'm off to Treviso for a bit of under 20s action at the weekend,
nice.
Which will be good on Saturday. So that is me. Right. I think we are out of here. We will be back then next week ahead of the semi-finals, our penultimate episode. So we will see you then. Philippa, thanks very much. Ciao for now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.